What's up? What's going on, everybody? I probably have a bad internet connection today, but what else is new on this show? This is the Periodic Table, the show where we not only talk about how bad my internet is, but we talk about science. This is the weekly science news show over here at youtube.com/BrandonHanna. Please like, comment, and subscribe, where we break down the hottest science news stories of the week. We had a two-week hiatus, but we are back with an amazing panel of hosts. But before we get to them, I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. I'm a mechanical engineer. You might know me over from AfterBuzz TV or the Popcorn Talk Network, or, of course, the movie Trivia Schmodown. And speaking of which, I have two amazing Schmodown rookies and faction mates of mine this season joining us to talk about science for this week. Let's start off to my left, your right. He is an actor, of course. He's also in the Schmodown, a Webby-nominated associate director of media planning for Amazon Prime Video. That is a mouthful, but damn if it ain't an impressive mouthful. It is Felix Morit. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Nice to meet everybody that's in the chat today.
Yes, and super great to have you. And of course, last but certainly not least, she is a teacher. So she's just made for this type of show, I think, because it's like I said, this is like a big virtual science classroom that we're all a part of and learning. And we're all normally students, but today we have a teacher. And of course, you might also know her as Christina V from the movie Trivia Schmodown. Well, it's Christina V.
Hi, I am cheating on my first love of math today, and we will talk about some science.
Nice.
Hey, it's all good. I love math, science, you name it. I'm a math geek. I think Felix is also a bit of a math geek, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, yeah.
Numbers are my jam.
Exactly. Numbers are our jam on this show, and we do have a great show for you all today. The quote-unquote USS Jellyfish is emitting a strange radio waves from a distant galaxy cluster. Also, scientists find a deep sea bacteria that are invisible to the human immune system. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? We're going to try to find out. And we do, of course, have a special segment for this week. It's something I'm just calling, well, cute animals. We have a rabbit walking on its hands, and scientists think they found out the reason why. So that's an exciting one. But before we get to all that animal cuteness and excitement, let's jump up to our main story for this week. It is all about the USS Jellyfish emitting a strange radio signal. And I do have a picture here for you guys from the article itself. Boom, look at that cosmic jellyfish. And obviously, guys, as always, I'm a bit distracted this week. As always, all the links to the articles that we talk about on the show are in the description down below. But look at that. Look at that cosmic cluster that looks just like a jellyfish right out of SpongeBob SquarePants. And well, guys, something's fishy in the southern constellation Phoenix. Strange radio emissions from a distant galaxy cluster take the shape of a gigantic jellyfish, complete with head and tentacles, as you just saw. Moreover, the cosmic jellyfish emits only the lowest radio frequencies and can't be detected at higher frequencies. The unusual shape and radio spectrum tell a tale of intergalactic gas washing over galaxies and gently revving up electrons spewed out by gargantuan black holes long ago. And this was reported by researchers on March 10th in the Astrophysical Journal. Spanning 1.2 million light years, this strange entity lies in Abel 2877. That sounds like a stormtrooper number to me. Cluster of galaxies 340 million light years from Earth. That's a long distance. And researchers have dubbed the object, well, the USS Jellyfish because, well, it looks like a jellyfish. So before I get any further into the nitty-gritty details of this article, Felix, let's throw it over to you first. What were your overall thoughts learning about the USS Jellyfish? Are you a space guy? Is the cosmos something that excites you?
It does. I mean, obviously, I grew up, I think, as all of us did, in a generation of Bill Nye getting wheeled into a classroom on a rainy day, as well as Neil deGrasse Tyson. But my mind actually went to a different place. I don't think it comes to a surprise that we're all film nerds. Most people, I assume, associate USS with Star Trek. I instantly started digging through my closet to see if I had an old ham radio, like frequency, if I could message my dad like 30 years in the past, because the radio waves that they talk about in this say, mirror the frequency levels that our current AM and FM radio signals do. And You know, from obviously the reading that I did on this, that's pretty rare. Most cosmic rays operate at a much higher frequency spectrum than this does, but even, you know, the UV ray lights that we see. So it was definitely really cool to kind of dig in. Trying to figure out, I think, you know, what sparked that is what got my brain going. Because they've been dormant for 2 billion years. What's that kind of thing that wakes it up? Is another supermassive black hole in the area? Is it a supernova that's emitting all of those cosmic rays to reinvigorate that plasma? I think there's obviously still a lot of questions unknown, but it's definitely a lot of cool stuff to uncover just floating around in the ether.
Yeah, no, it is really interesting how much information that we can gather just by looking up at the night sky. It is truly incredible. And it's always funny, like we have constellations that, you know, kind of like we have like the Big Dipper, which obviously looks like a Big Dipper, and you have Orion looks like a guy with a bow and arrow. It's like, it's amazing how our imaginations can run wild, and we could see things out in the universe and kind of have a little fun with it, make our own interpretation. But also there's something very scientific to take away from all this. So Christina, let's go over to you next. What are your overall thoughts on the USS Jellyfish? Are you a fan of outer space? I know you're a big math fan. Math is your jam, but is space your jelly?
Well, space is also my jam because I love that movie. But yeah, I mean, I loved learning about space. Like, I remember being in fifth grade, the first time you ever learned about it, you learned about the constellations. But I will say, I was not a fan of the movie Gravity because I was like, this is some scary stuff that is occurring right now. Yeah. Like, that was an anxiety attack. I was like, go see it in IMAX in 3D. And I was like, are you people outside your mind? Like, no, this is space. Black holes, like, low-key, one of the things I'm scared of most in life is a black hole just swallowing us up. So when I read this and it was like, oh, this was just two black holes that just decided to like wake up, I did not appreciate that. It was like, this is scary stuff. But no, it's definitely like, I love the idea of like, there's just other life out there and that it's not just us. And that, I mean, look at how far technology has gone that we're, you know, finding things that are, what, 342 light years away from where we are. And it was just, you know, not that long ago, we were trying to get a man on the moon. And just like the vast, you know, amount of information we have been able to figure out from that time is just like pretty impressive. And yet we still name things USS Jelly.
Yeah, I think what's also cool, I mean, if I understood this correctly, right, we associate, like you said, Christina, black holes as these massive objects that are so dense, they bring in anything, including light, and they just destroy it. The idea that we're seeing something that was birth almost from a black hole is really cool. The idea that there's a piece of creation in all of this. So I think something that a lot of people don't associate, including myself, with a black hole.
Well, yeah, because in theory, and correct me if I'm wrong, that black holes are just like ever expanding. So it's almost like it was the reverse now of like, maybe there's a time limit where after, you know, after 2 billion years, they run out or they reverse themselves. So where does that lead, you know, that if we assume that, you know, the Earth is still going to be around for another 2 billion years, what else can we figure out?
It's funny that you put it in the idea of the reverse and the idea of a jellyfish. I got into a deep jellyfish deep dive when I was reading this. Do you guys know about the immortal jellyfish?
No.
So there's a, I don't know the exact like genus and the official name of it, but it's nicknamed the immortal jellyfish. And what it does, similar to how you talked about the black hole right there, is once it gets near the end of its life cycle, it can tell its cells to reverse the aging process. And it comes back to its like very infantile form. Sometimes it dies, sometimes it can go through that cycle once more and it lives two lives. But yeah, I think it's perfectly dubbed jellyfish for that reason as well. The idea of something that's nearing the end of its life then comes back with new creation.
So are we harvesting those cells at all? Because like I'm down to that.
I mean, that's Botox 2.0.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? We've had some interesting topics on this show about things that feel like mad science. So that's sooner or later, that's going to be something I think that all happens. Scientists, if you want to examine these jellyfish a little more closely, please do it with caution. Because if Ben Goddard were on this show like he was a few weeks ago, he would be yelling right now to stop it because somehow it would bring its way back around to Terminator and Skynet, and we don't want any of that. But let me see if I can pronounce this correctly, guys, because I'm horrible with names. But so basically, we have a quote here that says, "This is a source which is invisible to most of the radio telescopes that we have been using for the last 40 years," says Melanie Johnston Hollett, an astrophysicist at Curtin University in Perth, Australia. It holds the record for dropping off the fastest with its increasing radio frequency. So Johnston Hollett's colleague Torrence Hodgson, a graduate student at Curtin, is the one who discovered the USS Jellyfish while analyzing data from the Murchison Wide Field Array, a complex of radio telescopes in Australia that detect low-frequency radio waves. And these radio waves are more than a meter long and correspond to photons, which are particles of light with the lowest energies. And remarkably, the USS Jellyfish is about 30 times brighter at 87.5 megahertz than which is a frequency similar to that of an FM radio station than at 185.5 megahertz. That's a mouthful. I'm not even entirely sure what these frequencies, what the takeaway from that is. But what I found particularly interesting was this Murchison Wide Field Array, which I do, I'm trying to get better at engineering the show, guys, while I host. I do have a photo here, and I think this is just a really cool thing. I love that we have different arrays and telescopes set up on Earth to kind of detect these frequencies. And every once in a while, we catch something particularly interesting. I love the technology aspect of it all. And Felix, it sounds like you agree with that. But is there, and you did mention some things already that you found interesting about an article, but was there one thing in this article that really stood out to you as being like, wow, this was the main takeaway? This is what I really, really find interesting. And you said you already went down a rabbit hole of jellyfish, so I'm assuming it's along those lines.
I did go down a rabbit hole of jellyfish, but I did also subsequently go down a rabbit hole of frequencies and seeing what that spectrum is of obviously, you know, where our eyes can take in information, but also radio waves to cosmic rays, which are those dual ends of the spectrum. I think the thing that excited me the most is, almost like you said, it's the advancement in technology, because undoubtedly, there's a ton of stuff, not only like this, but stuff that we haven't discovered yet. And seeing that technology is able to read things at a much more minute level is really, really exciting. Because, again, we have a spectrum of what we know. It, much like space, I'm sure that spectrum is infinite. And as technology gets better, we'll have a better understanding of what this is. But, you know, the USS Jellyfish is only the beginning of the USS Zoology. I'm sure that lives in the universe. And that's what really excited me.
Awesome. Perfectly well said. And for someone who didn't understand the whole radio frequency aspect of it, I think that was a really good summation of the main takeaways of that element of the article. But Christina, let's go over to you next. Was there one main takeaway that you had from this article that you walked away going like, wow, I'm really happy that I know this now, or I want to learn more?
I think I've always found it fascinating with science how many discoveries were done accidentally. So, you know, the person that discovered this was working on something completely different. And now, you know, we're shifting gears into this. So it's like, part of me is like, that's so cool. Like you accidentally made this like major scientific discovery. And the other part of me like feels bad. Like, oh, you just have to stop, I guess, what you were working on. But when you think of how many things, like how hard scientists work to discover things and create things, and how many of those things were actually done accidentally, is like pretty cool to think about also, of just like, we just have some of this stuff is truly happenstance. But I just love I said it before, but I'll say it again, I just love the idea that there's so much more out there, and like I'm very excited to see how technology will advance to see what else we can discover, and if there are aliens, please come visit us, because I am down for that.
Unless you're here to invade, then away. For me personally, it's not scientific, but my favorite accidental invention was the chocolate chip cookie. So I don't know. Ooh, if
wait, I don't know this story.
From what I remember correctly, it's there was I forget the name of the woman who did it, but she was trying to make like a chocolate swirl cookie. She didn't have any baker's chocolate left, so she threw some Nestle's chocolate in the cookies instead. And the Nestle's chocolate has different properties where it like melts at different temperatures, so it stayed in little chunks and little chips and didn't actually blend into the cookie itself.
So I mean,
Nestle Toll House was the first chocolate chip cookie.
Claim to fame. I'm going to butcher the phrase, but like the idea that, what is it? Necessity is the mother of all invention or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Based off what you just said, Christina, and that story, very clearly, I think accidents are really what guide us to those inventions and discoveries. Yeah, that is a huge takeaway from this.
Yeah, definitely. So it's a great, fascinating story on something new that we're learning in the cosmos. So go check that one out, guys. But our next story, we're going to take back down to planet Earth, deep down under the depths of the ocean. But before we do that, everyone watching, I just want to thank you. We've got Haskell420 and Sabrina Ramirez in the live chat, as always. Thank you so much for being here, for supporting this show every single week. If you're watching, please like this video. If you are in the live chat, get involved. I want to hear your thoughts. What are your thoughts on space jellyfish versus ocean jellyfish? Which one is your favorite? I want to know. Leave a comment down below. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the little notification bell if you want to hang out with us every week talking science. It really means a lot. So let's now move on to our next story. Like I just hinted at, scientists found deep sea bacteria that are invisible to the human immune system. So I thought this was particularly interesting, and I don't know exactly what the implications of this could be, but bacteria collected from more than a mile below the surface of the Pacific Ocean may have just blown one of immunology's longest held assumptions out of the water. I love the way that they phrased that. Yeah. The bacteria are so alien to humans that our immune cells do not even register that they exist, making them completely invisible to our immune systems. And this totally contradicts one of the classic tenets of immunology. And that is that the human immune system has evolved to be able to sense every single microbe that it could to catch the infectious ones. And we do have a quote here, the idea that the immune system is a generalist, it doesn't care if something was a threat or not. Well, it just got rid of it. But no one had really pressure tested that assumption until now, says Jonathan Kagan, an immunologist at Boston Children's Hospital and one of the study leaders, told Live Science. So this is, I think, particularly interesting. I am not someone, I'm a mechanical engineer, immunology, anatomy, biology, all that stuff is not necessarily my field, but to see, to witness a long tenet of science basically get now thrown out the window.
Yeah.
And there is actual like new groundbreaking discoveries being made in this field, I think that is just really exciting all on its own. So Christina, let's throw it over to you first. What was your overall thoughts on this article? Do you think that there are positive or negative implications maybe to this discovery? Should we be worried, God forbid, about a bacteria sneaking its way past our immune systems that is alien and under the ocean? I don't know. Don't go into the ocean, guys, unless you're Kristen Stewart. But even then.
Well, first, I want to thank you for the PTSD of reading an article about unknown bacteria while we're still in a pandemic.
So, good point. Yeah. Stuff.
But it's separate, but like it's different, but right. The same, but different.
I feel like we're all immunologists right now. Like, isn't that what everybody is now? Yeah. We're all reading articles on Facebook. No, I really actually enjoyed this article more than the last one. I found this one super fascinating because I just love the idea of, you know, could we possibly, you know, because this was just brand new. So it's like, what are the implications? What can we do with this in the future? Can we use this bacteria maybe to fight other things off? Is this something we need to be concerned about? Is this something that we can engineer to be helpful to us? Because it seems like the gist I got from the article was where you live, like your habitat has a lot to do with how your immune system responds to different bacteria. So it might be because the way, I don't know, just the habitat itself is so different. That's why you were not recognizing it. So not necessarily harmful. It's just that it's never going to affect the other, going the other way around. You know, normal germs that we're so used to isn't going to affect whatever creature is living in the depths of the ocean because the habitats are just so different.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully it's not like a War of the Worlds type situation where we go down there, catch some sort of deep sea common cold and just all kind of die. That would be horrendous. All right. Positive note. Let's go to you, Felix. No, I'm kidding, guys. Oh. I think this is a really interesting article and we have nothing to worry about. Felix, tell us why.
I mean, I'm going to don the Ben Goddard tinfoil hat, if I'm honest.
Oh, no.
This one scared me a little bit. Almost like how I talked about the immortal jellyfish. This reminded me of the zombie ant, if you guys know what that is, which is a fungus that takes the body of an ant. It gets infected and then moves into the brainstem, and it can control its actions, its wants, its desires. I think the idea of having something that your body has currently no reason to believe it needs to fight kind of scares me a little bit. And I think even beyond that, 1 mile in the sea is nothing. I mean, if you want to talk about, they found this in a location where realistically there's no mammals, and that's why this doesn't work with our body system. There's whales that pass through, but only momentarily, because they breed in different locations and they feed, right? You go to some place like the Mariana Trench, which can fit the entire Mount Everest upside down, and you could fully submerge it. There's miles and miles and miles, I'm sure, of even, I don't know, it could be nicer, it could be worse bacteria that we could use to our advantage. And I mean, hopefully one day use to kind of cure cancer cells, but to that same effect, right? You don't know. If your body doesn't have the way to fight it off, that scares me more than it excites me.
Yeah, I mean, so...
Thanks, Felix. I was really pumped about this article until right now.
Don't get me wrong. I love this article. And I love Google Deep Dives. I do like 2 hours every night on a new topic. This one took me down the idea of, okay, how do cancer cells work? Can we find a way to then throw this in your body and then program this cell via, whatever our current methods are, through CRISPR, if you were to find a way to bring that in? I know that that's a sensitive subject in itself, but... I couldn't find a way to reconcile the idea of, like, we can use this to our advantage yet. And again, that goes back to the previous article, right? I know that there will be a day where, like, this discovery kind of is like the one step, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, and we'll get there. But just in terms of, like, what I know right now, I'm hiding behind a little fence, like, waiting for somebody to do something with it and poke it.
Well, I'll put the tinfoil hat on going the other way of... Could this be used for, like, biological warfare?
Is that good?
No, it's not good.
If you're on the side that wins.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to pass it over. This is the one that, like, has grease on it. It's a little dirty because I went a little evil. But, yeah. You know, like, that's another thing. Like, if we can manipulate it for good, totally. Can it be manipulated for evil? Dun, dun, dun.
Hopefully, see, the whole, I like to be very optimistic about science, and hopefully it's only ever used for good. Okay, yes. Guys, you know, I don't like these movies that villainize scientists, like, you know, even if something silly as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where you have Tyler Perry using the ooze for evil. It's like, yeah. No, use the ooze for good. Come on. That's what a real scientist would do. But no, as Felix said, this is, 4,000 meters down, 1,650 meters southwest of Hawaii, and there are no known mammals in this region of the ocean. And they were able to go down there in a submarine and pluck out some of this bacteria out of the water samples. And they actually, what I find really interesting is that they introduced 50 of the strains to mouse and human immune cells, and we're very surprised to see that 80% of the microbes escaped detection from both human and mouse immune cells. So 80%, that is quite a bit. But, you know, it is really, really fascinating to me. And this is something that even goes back into space. And I remember one time in a group chat, Chance Ellison referred to the ocean as ground space, and he's never lived it down since. But you know what? There is like a little bit of... I think a little bit of truth to that. You know, we have the unknown out in the cosmos. We actually have there are scientists and engineers and people over at NASA whose entire jobs revolve around making sure we don't contaminate other planets and other celestial bodies with bacteria from Earth, because there are so many unknown potential dangerous consequences. And now we're finding out that if you go deep enough into the ocean, there are also down there different types of bacteria that we are not familiar with, and we don't necessarily know how it's going to react with our biology. So it could be a cause for concern, but I think if anything, it's a lesson learned, and we can use this information to better protect the health of the human race and people in general going forward in the future to make sure that nothing bad ultimately ends up happening. I think there's a positive takeaway where this could be, I think, preventive to help people not get sick from unknown bacteria or unborn unknown diseases in the future. Christina, tell me, I've removed your tinfoil hat and you can see the positivity.
Yes. I like to stir the pot. I'm a pot stirrer. No, I was always looking at this in a positive light. I thought this was, I'd be curious to see how the story continues of, you know, it's not, your immune system didn't respond to 80% of them right now. So I'd be curious to see if that changes over time. I think they said because of the different environments where you would find the bacteria, it doesn't really live very long outside of it.
Yeah.
But I would just be curious to see, well, what's the evolution? Does our immune system eventually figure it out? Is it something that it's just not harmful anyway, so it doesn't really matter? So I definitely feel like this was like a great intro to this topic, and I would love to see how this one unfolds.
Yeah, yeah, I would love to see how this progresses. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Felix.
No, I was going to say to that point, you haven't taken off my tinfoil hat, but I think it's more of like a beanie that's resting back here now. I do think as we talk about going into space, right, and if we use Elon Musk as an example, somebody who said he wants to have a manned mission to Mars in 2026 after a successful 2024 unmanned mission, right? Learning now, before we even go off world, the idea that there are things that can impact our body that we are not going to automatically fight, I think does present a huge positive. It opens a door of a scientific mindset of, all right, we need to prepare for things that like our bodies are not going to do ourselves. How do we build in preventative measures? That part is awesome. I don't want to seem like a completely negative. It's just like I said, I'm peeking behind the fence and I'm waiting. I'm just waiting.
No, that's a totally understandable. I mean, it's always good to be skeptical when it comes to science and new discoveries, and make sure not to be a conspiracy theorist, but being a skeptic is good because it actually helps science progress further. And when you're skeptical of new findings and new takeaways and new discoveries and new scientific papers, it can allow you to improve upon the science going forward, because that's the great thing about scientists, that they're always trying to one-up one another, because they all want to be the one who figures out the actual like objective truth of it all. So I think as long as there's that very friendly competitive nature among the scientific community, we always have a reason to be optimistic. And I think it's also the main takeaway from this article here. They do say that this knowledge will better help immunotherapeutics in the future to make sure that people don't get infected with bacteria that causes any potential sort of harm. So
I think
we'll just have to wait and see. And hopefully there's a follow-up on this story down the road, because I would love to see where things progress, like Christina said. But let's move on now to our special segment of the week. We're talking about a very cute animal today, guys. Very excited. This rabbit, it walks on its hands. And scientists think they have found the genetic reason why. But before I get into it any further, I do have a video to play right now, guys. So let me turn off my lead host tinfoil hat and put on my engineer hat and see how I can do this. Here we go. Ooh, and there we go. We could have our live reactions as well. So guys, look at the way that this rabbit walks. Look at that. That is something else. And there you can see all now the stuff that I normally watch on YouTube. But yeah, so that is one cute animal. You guys agree?
So I purposely did not watch the video before this. I only read the article. So that was a true live reaction.
There you go. You saw it here first, folks. So let's get into it. In 1935, French veterinarians observed a rabbit with a peculiar gait, which I learned a new vocabulary word today, which means basically the way that it walks. Because I don't talk very good sometimes, so that's new for me. But sometimes scientists instead of sometimes, oof, I'm way off. When walking or running, I'm going to try to pronounce the name of this type of rabbit, but bear with me. The Sauteur d'Alfort rabbit, maybe, would lift its back legs over its head, scrambling along the ground on its four limbs like a circus performer, which you guys just witnessed. But now scientists have pinned down the genetic mutation that likely causes this breed to have this strange form of locomotion. The gene involved holds clues to how the spinal cord enables walking, hopping, and even standing, handstanding, a finding that dovetails with other work over the past decade on mice, bringing mice back into it. Mice are involved in science a lot, and horses. Together, the studies provide an emerging picture that may help explain how all vertebrates, including humans, move around. So again, this is a fun discovery about a rabbit, cute little rabbit walking on his hands, but it does have implications for learning more about the human anatomy itself and potentially how to treat humans who do have health problems with their vertebrae. So Felix, let's go over to you first. Were you excited to see this rabbit walk on its hands? And did you have any key takeaways from this article that really excited and sparked your own scientific curiosity?
Well, the first thing it sparked is how long can I do a handstand for? Which was way less than I could as a kid. But yeah, it was definitely cool. I don't know if you guys have seen. I've definitely, you know, been walking around and I'll see a dog do that when it goes to pee. And I've never questioned why. I'm just like, that's very odd. But going through and seeing the way that the muscles are, or that structure is overgrown to make sure that those, or when you're using those muscles, right, they're pushing off extra and it's kicking you up in that way. That was really cool to learn about. I think, again, scare tinfoil hat going on to Ben Goddard. When you're talking about something that's a four-legged creature and is like now bipedal, using his example from 2 weeks ago, now anything can walk upstairs. That's kind of like the one leverage point that we as a human species have over a lot of things. But no, it was awesome. It was definitely really cute. And I think seeing it also from a non-evolutionary standpoint was really interesting because, right, most of the reason that we do things, the way that we walk, the way that we have our thumbs, come from necessity of evolution. As far as I know, right, there's no reason that presents itself that rabbit needs to do that. It's just like, it's a legacy thing. It's almost like an echo or a shadow of something that has just been passed down through history. And that was really cool to see.
Yeah, definitely. This, of course, I loved how you always put this skeptical mind towards everything. It's like, if the rabbits can walk upstairs, we're done for.
Exactly.
That's my main takeaway. But no, Christina, let's go over to you next. What was your overall thoughts about hearing about this adorable rabbit, but also potentially how it can help humans in the future who do have their own, you know, health issues with their backs and struggle to, you know, there's a lot of people out there that do, you know, unfortunately, like, have to live the rest of their lives like in wheelchairs or have serious problems. And maybe this type of discovery, understanding the exact DNA, the exact genes that allow this rabbit to walk, it could help us better, I don't, for lack of a better word, manipulate our own anatomy. I don't know. I'm kind of just like going on a little ramble here.
But definitely love the idea of that when you think about people that, you know, are paralyzed, if there's anything we can do regarding with the genetics or stem cell research or anything for them to regain anything. For those of you that don't know me, I live on the East Coast. So I live in Jersey. In Philadelphia, there is a museum called the Franklin Institute, which if you are on this coast and you've never visited, you need to visit. You guys are on the West Coast. You can come visit me and I will take you. But they do... once a month, they would do like an after hours where you had to be 21 to go and they had a different theme. And one of, I don't remember the exact theme for this, but one of the like booths that was there at the museum was the orthopedic hospital. And they were actually showing us like the exoskeletons that you know, paraplegics can wear on their legs and it'll have them walk. And obviously we're still in like the very early stages, but part of the issue was they had to be able to fully support the human body and their back. So that would be cool to see these kind of ideas put together where maybe, you know, the genes from the rabbit won't perfectly cure somebody, but it might give them enough strength to then be able to use the technology aspect of it. So just, I don't know, I love medical advances. I think it's so cool when you see like how far we have gone. And if you can take that and just help people even a little bit, and then we can use outside technology, I'm all about it. I hope it works. I think that's something that's super cool.
Yeah, no, I think that was a really amazing way to put it, because, you know, immediately my head also went as well. Wow, if we can pinpoint exactly what genes and where in the DNA and all this stuff, pinpoint exactly what allows people to, what certain parts of their body to function the way that they're supposed to. If a part of your body, for whatever reason, whether it be from birth or through a tragic accident, if you're paralyzed or a certain body part isn't functioning as normal, if we can pinpoint exactly what is wrong and kind of like restore those cells or regenerate, you know, the genes, you know, the way that we need it, you know, that can be like, that can be huge. But I really loved your take on it, where, okay, well, we might not be able to get that far advanced, but if we can use this type of a discovery to treat patients to the point where they can now walk with the aid of a mechanical component, with like, and kind of like mix the biology and the technology together and use that to give people better lives, I think that would be a really incredible breakthrough. So Felix, I want to throw it over to you next. Did your mind also go down, for lack of a better word, this rabbit hole of thought, this train of thought of, wow, this is where this type of discovery could lead? Or did you maybe have a different takeaway?
No, I definitely had the same takeaway. I think it was really cool. And the location or the grouping of nerves escapes me from the article, but I think when it was talking about that, not all of this is necessarily controlled by the brain and the brainstem, right? There's a whole separate section that helps run through that. That was really cool to learn about, because I think you always associate that, like, hey, everything is here, and then this is just kind of moving on by rote. But yeah, the same idea. I think it's really fascinating to see how we could take this and apply it to humans. And like you said, if it's not directly like gene editing or doing anything to make something that reinvigorates those nerves for our activity or finding some solution, the idea of having an exoskeleton that kind of helps that generation move forward, I think is fantastic. And I think that's a large part of, you know, what helps science, is taking something that lives organically and then how do we replicate it? Because we're the best blueprint in the world, right? Trying to make something from scratch is always going to be harder than finding something in the world and then trying to build off of that. And I think that this is a great, great piece of the great center point of the blueprint that's going to help us get there. Now, in 5 years, if we're going to have like a lot of Iron Men flying around because they've just gotten so advanced, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think everybody should be entitled to some sort of Iron Man suit.
Yeah.
In the not too distant future. But yeah, definitely I agree. And thank you for, like, you know, putting that like so eloquently. This type of stuff is way out of my field of expertise, so I'm learning along just as much as everyone else. But it is I always find it particularly interesting where scientists can take something that you don't expect would be able to have major implications down the road. Something as, you know, I want to say mundane, but when you see a cute little rabbit walking on its two front paws, it's hard to use the word mundane. But, yeah, you know, in general, like scientists are with the ocean bacteria, taking something that most people would just look at and like be like, oh, like that's cool, but I'm going to go about my day. There's always something to learn from even the smallest things. And that's something I've really grown to appreciate over the weeks of doing this show, is I've really noticed a trend of scientists always finding a way to take something that you wouldn't expect to change the world, but always has the potential to change the world. So this is really exciting. So before we wrap things up, I just want to get some closing thoughts. Christina, did you have any more closing thoughts on this article in particular, or any of the other topics that we discussed today?
I will just say that I'm a very large fan of Grey's Anatomy, and I'm sure it's totally 100% real. And they've done a lot of like brain mapping storylines and gene mapping, which I'm sure it's inspired from some true story. So I definitely think a lot of the things that we talked about today can be applied for good in the medical world. Space still really scares me, and I'm so excited that I'm not an astronaut.
I for one personally would love to be an astronaut. I don't know if I would go all the way to Mars. I think I would take the risk going to the moon, though. You know, I think the moon would be a risk I'd be willing to take. It's close enough. I can at least like pretend I can still see my house. you know, like, ah, like I can still see my house from here. So it's good. Like, it's not on fire. I'm like, ah, all right, I'll be back soon. Felix, let's go over to you next. Do you have any closing thoughts, other takeaways from this article or any of the other topics discussed today?
Yeah, as much as I, you know, wore the tinfoil hat today, I think that second article is what really drew me in. There's a lot of practical applications that I think a discovery like that can be used for, also for good. Even the idea of having that be a new way to administer medication that your body might innately fight off, having that be a delivery system that encapsulates it, I think is something that I didn't talk about directly, but that's where my mind went, is like, hey, if you need something to get from A to B, put it in this and it will get there one way or another. So again, like you said, Brandon, all of this can be used for good. The smallest of discoveries can be changed from like a mountain to a molehill in terms of the practical applications for humanity moving forward. So I know we're coming out of a shitty year, like a crappy year in 2020. But I think, you know, things like these, which a lot of people don't talk about, really should be, because it's leading to a much better future.
Yeah, definitely. And that was very well put. I didn't even think about it. I love like that outside the box thinking of, you know, that ocean bacteria could be used as a medicine delivery system. If your body wants to reject the medicine, you could potentially hide it within. I think that is really fascinating. I think Felix and Christina, both of you had some amazing like interpretations of the article, some amazing takeaways and outside the box thinking. And I really loved having you both here. I think we're all a little bit smarter for it. So I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. Christina, let's go over to you first. If the good people want to find you online, share fears about space and the ocean, and maybe talk a little bit about math, where can they find you?
You guys can find me right here on Twitter at Christina_VEE19. I'm fairly new to the whole tweeting business. I feel like an old person when I say that, you know, but Instagram was my jam, but then, you know, I'm trying to establish myself on Twitter. So yeah, definitely. If you guys have any conspiracy theories about space, like, I'm all about it. So hit me up.
Awesome, guys. Remember to conspiracy theory responsibly. Felix, let's go over to you next. If the good people want to find you online, talk about math, talk about medication delivery systems, or even shmoney ball, where can we find you?
That's right. I mean, listen, much like everyone on this, I'm a huge science nerd, math nerd, film nerd. You can find me everywhere at Felix Mort across all social medias. A little bit of cross promotion. I know Skybound is obviously the parent of the Schmodown now. I just finished working on Invincible, which was their show that released yesterday. So please go out and watch that show. It's awesome if you like adult themed violence and animation. But otherwise, I'll be seeing you and these two people here in the Schmodown this season. Go out and buy your Stars merch.
Yeah.
There you go. Awesome. Great plugs. I love to see it. I'm, of course, Brandon Hanna. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrandonHanna07. If you're watching now, you've already found me over at youtube.com/BrandonHanna. So for the third time I ask, please like, hit that subscribe button and notification bell, and leave a comment down below if you feel so inclined to join in on the scientific conversation. And that just about wraps things up here today. Thank you again to Felix and Christina for joining us. Thank you to everyone watching. It's great to be back talking about science with you all. And as always, thank you for taking time out of your day for this moment of